Welcome into the PFN Bengals podcast. I am Dallas Robinson. He is Jay Morrison. Jay, the NFL draft is complete. The Bengals made all 10 of their picks. Somewhat surprising. We'll get into that today on today's episode. How are you feeling? Are you recovered from this long weekend at Paul Brown Stadium? How is Jay Morrison doing on Tuesday morning?
Jay Morrison on Sunday was a mess. Jay Morrison on Monday was 100%. So I am, Tuesday, I feel great. It all caught up to me. Just not a lot of sleep on Thursday night, Friday night, even Saturday night. And I feel great, ready to go, refreshed, ready to talk about what happened this weekend.
It's a very long weekend for everybody, but it's a fun weekend too. Like overhaul the rosters, see all these new players. It's a great experience. Jay, you're going to be having an event today with Paul Jr. tonight. If anyone's listening to this tonight on YouTube, you and Paul Dana Jr. at Nation Kitchen, at the bank, 7 p.m. tonight with Bengals Director of Scouting, Mike Potts. Come and get all the analysis on why the Bengals made these moves that they made on over the weekend, right? We get to hear from the man himself, Mike Potts, that had so much research and effort into making these picks. So come down 7 p.m. tonight. Check out Paul and Jay at the Nation Kitchen and Bar at the Banks. Come check out. It'll be a great time. I'll definitely be listening to it after you put the recording out.
Yeah, and Mark Shalafo, who does the Who Day Light with Paul on Friday, is going to be there as well. And we're going to do a segment at the end where we're going to take questions from the audience. So if you have questions about this draft class, by all means, come down. Now, you're going to have to submit them on paper. We're not handing the microphone to people and not knowing what's coming. But looking forward to seeing everybody out there. I know a lot of my friends are coming down. I know a lot of Paul's friends are coming down. I'm hoping a lot of Bengals friends come down. I'd love to pack the place and be possibly the start of something regular with shows from. Nation is an incredible place for food. There's a sports book attached. There's everything you could want is right there.
It's going to be a great time. I think just to hear the thought process behind a lot of these picks, I think will just be illuminating. Honestly, I can't wait to hear what Mike says about all these picks. Here's what we're going to do today. We're going to wrap up the draft coverage. And the way we want to do this is go through a through different kind of exercises here. We're going to talk about the best and worst case scenarios for every one of these picks the Bengals made. And that could be what they do in year one, what they do over their career. We want to kind of analyze the ceiling and the floor for all of these picks and what they could be over these next couple seasons. We're going to do a couple of superlatives in our favorite moves, our worst moves of the draft. We're going to talk winners and losers, which Bengals veterans came out looking the best and who came out looking the worst after this draft. And then at the very end, we're going to talk about our projected depth chart. It's we got months to go. We got an entire training camp and preseason before this depth chart is officially set for week one. But we want to give an early look at how this 53-man roster could play out. Let's start with our best and worst case scenarios, Jay. I mean, 10 picks, like I said, no trades, no moving up or down. They made every selection. It was kind of surprising. In round one, it was someone that we had largely identified as a potential selection in Amarius Mims. It's the upside is there, obviously. I think everyone who's covers the Bengals, who listens to anything about the Bengals knows Amarius Mims may be the highest upside of any player in the first round if everything goes right. I think best case scenario, you could say he's the best right tackle in the NFL. Maybe the best left tackle in the NFL. Like, who knows how things go down the road. But I think if you're looking long term for the best case scenario, it's that he's an all pro at right tackle.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Multiple years as an all pro. I don't know. Maybe he gets to that level where he's the best right tackle in the league. Yeah. Certainly interesting that he's going to wear number 71 and he is that once belonged to Willie Anderson, the best right tackle in franchise history. So, a lot there in terms of potential, which is why they were willing to take that risk and take the swing for him there, even though he only has 8 starts. Floor, I mean, anytime you're talking Bengals offensive lineman, you've got to say Cedric Oboehi, complete bust. I mean, I don't think that that's going to happen with him, but there's always that question, coming in with such little experience. I'd be really surprised if he's not, a multi-year starter in this league. But anytime you're talking about a guy that just hasn't proven it that much in college, I think worst case scenario is worst case scenario where it just doesn't work out at all.
Yeah. I think the worst case scenario is the floor is extremely low, that injuries keep popping up and could he just become the next Mekhi Becton? You're right. A guy who was drafted pretty high, who's missed multiple entire seasons with injuries, who has flashed when he's been given the opportunity and when he's stayed healthy, but just really has never developed into that tier one offensive tackle. We just saw Mekhi Becton sign with the Eagles for like $5 million on a 1 year deal. I think that's like kind of the lowest Amarius Mims would be. He'd kind of like an interesting prospect that keeps bouncing around the league and the teams keep trying to figure out, right? Send him to Jeff Stoutland or Bill Callahan or one of these amazing coaches and try and figure him out. I feel like that's like the worst that could happen for Mims. And in year one, I mean, is the best case that it's probably that he doesn't play in year one, right? That Trent Brown stays healthy, that this Bengals offensive line all stays healthy, that Amarius Mims gets most of his rookie year just to develop and refine his technique a little bit before he steps in. But if he does have to play in year one, I think like we keep hearing the phrase. I mean, Ian Cummings said this too. He's not necessarily raw. He just doesn't have that experience that when he has played, he has looked like he's got the development, like he has the technique of a guy who's seen a lot more reps than he actually has. So if he does have to play in year one, I think it's the Bengals could feel comfortable, even if he's out there just for a few games, a few snaps. I think the Bengals could be okay with that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Maybe the best case scenario is if he does play and not a Trent Brown serious injury where, you know, you're talking about he's out for the year and Mims has to take over, but a nagging ankle or something where he misses a start or two and you actually get a look at Amarius Mims and see what he can do. And then who knows, maybe he just kills it and blows it away and he Wally Pips Trent Brown. And just for the younger people, they may not get that reference, but I think that would be great to get him in there and see, you know, what he can do. Don't wish injury on Trent Brown by any stretch of the imagination, but he does have a history of him. So I think that would be, or, you know, go the other way. And maybe there's a game where they're just boat racing a team and you get him in late and you can kind of see it's not going to be a true evaluation because you're not going to be calling the plays you would in a normal situation. But I do think that ideally you would like to see him get some sort of snaps in live action this year, as opposed to just a total redshirt year. And then let's see what happens in 2025.
Yeah, I think the idea of getting his feet wet is a good one. Like, to at least get him in there beyond the preseason, beyond the training camp reps, and get some live action. I think that's a good idea. If we move to round two, Chris Jenkins in round two, I mean, talk about getting your feet wet. He's going to be the defensive tackle three, I think, this year. Like, there's no doubt about that. I think he's got a pretty big role coming up this season. I think going into 2024, it just depends – or, 2025, next season – it depends on what the Bengals do with Sheldon Rankins, with B.J. Hill. They're both under contract. Depends on how they play this year. Will they still be on the roster? Will Chris Jenkins just naturally ascend? Will he show enough in year one that he'll be able to naturally ascend and take over? I do think, you know, not to be an armchair psychologist, but just from watching Chris Jenkins talk and kind of learning his personality over these past few days, like, seems kind of obvious he's going to become a team leader on defense to me. It seems like he's got that personality, that's going to be something he will do. So, you know, I think usually you want your team leaders to be good players. So if that could happen and go hand in hand, that would be great. But I think the floor is pretty high on Chris Jenkins, even in year one.
Yeah, I agree. And it's something to consider that the way the Bengals do this, where they really target team captains, it's hard for those guys to come in and try to jump into that role where, you know, you have to kind of defer as a rookie. And Jordan Battle talked about that last year at the end of the year, where he wanted to say more, he wanted to do more, but he felt like he had to defer to the rookies. And now this year he plans, well, then they go out and bring in two safeties and he might not be starting again this year. But Jenkins is a guy where you could see really being a voice early on in his career. Best case scenario, I Aaron Donald Light, I mean, an undersized guy that can really affect the passing game, but also is strong against the run. I mean, I don't want to put that much pressure on him, but, and he brought it up. It was really interesting because he came out. They used to do these press conferences with the second and third round picks, where they'd bring him in just like they do the first round pick, and they talk to the media in front of cameras. And the schedule was so hectic this year. Well, they haven't done it since COVID anyhow. They did bring those second, third rounders in, but instead of putting them up in an official podium situation, they just walked those guys into the media room where we were all sitting and working. And, you know, Chris Jenkins just walked in like he owned the room and just held court. And he was really an impressive guy. And you can kind of see that being his personality in the locker room, wherever he goes. And he did. Someone asked him, or Kelsey Conway asked him, do you think you need to put on weight? And he was so offended by that question. But I mean, he playfully answered it. And he's like, look, I am in no way comparing myself to Aaron Donald, but Was Aaron Donald too small? Did Aaron Donald need to put on weight? So it was a good point that he brought up. I think that he can be a really special player in this league. I thought it was a great pick. You knew that, or you felt that they were going to go D tackle there. And there's just not a lot of premier run stoppers in this league. And that's a guy that can do both. That's what you're looking for. Those rare guys that can do both. And he is, it's going to be really interesting to see, how, because Trey Hendrickson doesn't talk to the media very much. Sam Hubbard does a lot, but it's good to get a second voice in there. And it's going to be really interesting to see how much the Bengals lean on Chris Jenkins to play in games, which I think will be a lot. I can see him in on early downs a lot. And then that allows you to kind of rotate B.J. Hill and Sheldon Rankins and keep them a little fresher because he is your best run stopper. But I think he's going to be a go-to guy for the media in the locker room as well.
Worst case scenario for Chris Jenkins, it's hard to say because, again, I do think the floor is so high on this pick that it's hard to see. I guess if you want to be negative, you could say that maybe he's physically maxed out, that maybe he just doesn't have a ton more upside and much more ceiling to go, and that he doesn't develop as a pass rusher. I think that's kind of what, if he doesn't turn into a high-end kind of interior presence, that's going to be the reasons. He just doesn't have any more physicality, and he doesn't have any more pass rushing techniques to come. But I just think the floor is so low with what he can already add as a run defender, what he can add it from a character perspective. And I just think he's got the growth mentality where he's going to ascend a little bit in terms of his physicality, his pass rush productivity, whatever it is. It's like, it's hard to deny a guy like that. It just feels like it's inevitable that he's going to make the most of whatever he's physically capable of. He will reach that. And maybe that's pie in the sky mentality, but it's hard to see how this pick could become a true miss. Like, could he not live up to what we're hoping is the 49th pick? Sure. Is he going to be a worst case scenario who doesn't have any role? That's kind of hard for me to see.
Yeah. And another thing, his dad and his uncle played over 300 games in the NFL. That means they were around long enough for him to experience that, to be in an NFL locker room at times and at going to games and knowing the ins and outs. And he's a guy you feel very comfortable. It's going to be professional and do all the right things. So you add that to his talent. It's just sky's the limit for him.
Let's talk about Jermaine Burton in round three. I mean, one of the most kind of, I wouldn't even call it a surprising pick, but it was a little out of, I'll use the word character. No pun intended. I mean, a lot of off the field, a lot of character concerns for Jermaine Burton, but the tape is wide receiver one caliber. And I think the Bengals were willing to take that risk here in round three.
Yeah, and not all red flags are equal. And, you look at what Jermaine, it was the term that kept coming up was emotional immaturity and hot-headed and reacting on instinct. And I think that's what it's not like he's a bad guy overall. It's just you got to get that out. You can't let teams bait you into personal fouls. You can't be taking swings at, it's not going to happen in the NFL where there's a court storm or a field storming. But still, just those controlling your emotions, you are going to have DBs that are going to test you in this league emotionally and mentally as well as physically. And he was another one I was really impressed because when he came in for that little session in the media room, it started off with, what time did you have to leave California to get here by now and travel stories. And then we did kind of go into some of the stuff about what's this process been like with every single team you meet with, asking you about your flaws and about these red flags. And I thought he was really good. I thought he handled it really well, showed a lot of maturity. Now, again, it's a controlled, calm situation. You have to see when the tempers start flaring and that kind of thing. But I think he's got an incredible ceiling as well. You mentioned it, the tape is first round tape. He's coming into an ideal situation. I mean, Milroe's throwing to him at Alabama was not the most accurate quarterback. Now he's got a Joe Burrow that's going to be throwing to him. And I could see him being a multi-year. I don't know if Pro Bowl is going to be hard because it's going to be hard to get two guys from the same team to the Pro Bowl. And you think Jamar Chase is going to be there, but he can put up those kind of, I'll say multiple year, 1,000-yard seasons. I see that in his future because I really think once T. Higgins moves on, I think Jermaine Burton's going to be a big part of this offense this year. But then next year after T. Higgins is gone, you're really going to see him and Jamar be a dynamic duo.
Yep, I agree. I think wide receiver three as soon as this year, I think is the likely outcome. And then week one in the next year, he's the long team kind of tag team partner for Jamar Chase once T leaves. I mean, I think that is the best case scenario. And a worst case, again, I think it's obvious that that whatever these off-field questions are, even if they're minor, that they just bubble up too much and he just kind of washes out of the league. I mean, the talent might keep him in the league long enough for that not to happen. Like, I think even if personality concerns crop up, even if these character concerns crop up, he'll be another guy that I think will just bounce around the league based purely on talent in a worst case scenario. But if he's able to come into this Bengals roster where they've spent the past couple of years revitalizing this culture, getting a guys who don't have a lot of these off-field questions, maybe they're built to bring in a guy like Jermaine Burton, who with a lot of veterans, even with Jamar Chase, with T. Higgins, even a guy like Trent Irwin, guys who have been around the league, been around this system, and say, you know, you've got all the talent in the world. You just need to harness it, keep your head on straight. You've shown it at the biggest programs in the country. It's time to do it in the NFL. Let's go. I think that's the best case scenario.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if Lou or Zach or someone tells the DBs to test him in camp. Yeah. When it starts getting physical and it's getting hot and emotions can run high, like start talking some smack with that guy and let's see how he reacts. Yeah.
All right, another third round pick, McKinley Jackson here at pick 97. You know, a little, we talked about him in the pre-draft process. Ian Cummings was maybe, or PFN NFL draft analyst Ian Cummings, maybe the highest person on McKinley Jackson in the NFL draft community. Yeah. I mean, he's extremely high in him. He had him as the 112th player on his board and the 12th best interior defender. Here's what Ian said in his scouting report. If McKinley Jackson can improve his leveraging, he can be a quality starter with natural utility as a nose tackle. He is viable early down utility, a lot of pass rushing juice for a space eater, and he can be a three down presence. That's the best case scenario, I think, is that he becomes a dominant run plugger and that he gets a little more pass rush juice. And I don't think he's going to become DJ Reader. I mean, again, we talk about lofty expectations. DJ Reader is a high expectation for a guy like McKinley Jackson to morph into. But if we're talking upside, I think that's what you're looking at, as a guy who, that big body in the middle, automatic run defender, develops a little bit as a pass rusher. I think that's the upside you're looking at.
Yeah, and Reader was a fourth round pick. McKinley Jackson's a third round pick. I think that's a decent comp. It was interesting because when they brought McKinley, like Chris Jenkins was holding court for so long that they brought McKinley Jackson and they were both in there. And everybody saw it, but it was so good talking to Chris Jenkins that just kind of let McKinley sit down at the other end of the table and not. And then finally Chris left and McKinley got to answer some questions. He's not the same guy. He's a much more quiet, reserved guy. But anytime you bring in that kind of, a bigger run plugger, I think you're scared that the floor is Tyler Shelvin, who is just a total bust. But, you know, Shelvin had some motor and heart red flags before the Bengals drafted him. He had some weight issues that was concerned. That's not the case with McKinley Jackson. He was a captain at Texas A&M. He's not that big where you don't have to worry about him blowing up and not taking care of his weight. So I do. I think that he has a I don't want to say a crazy high ceiling like Chris Jenkins does, but I don't think you worry about him being a bust. I see him playing out that 4-year contract here, and you know, maybe in 2025, maybe it's 2026, we see Jackson and Jenkins as the starting the starting defensive tackles on this team.
I could definitely see that. And I think if you do look at a worst case scenario for Jackson, it's that he was overdrafted and that he's not athletic enough to be anything but just a big body. And like you said, we've seen those kind of guys wash out before. So if that happens, then you could see an outcome like that. But I agree with you. I think there is some untapped upside there that he could tap into in year one. All right, fourth round, Eric All, tight end. The Bengals finally did it, drafted not just one tight end, but two, like double dipped on that position. A little surprising there. What's your best case scenario for Eric All? He's coming off an injury. He's had dealt with multiple injuries in college. I mean, is this a guy that has a lot of upside in your mind, or are you too concerned about the injuries?
I do think he has a lot of upside. And DJ Turner yesterday when we were in the locker room said that's a first round talent. You know, he's gone against him a lot at Michigan. And so obviously he's not a scout. He's not a roster builder, but he knows him as well as anybody. And I think there's a lot of upside there. The floor is scary because of the injuries, you know, a spinal fusion surgery, which he said went great. He had a little discomfort right after it happened, but it hasn't bothered him since. Then the ACL, but I mean, guys come back from ACLs all the time now. Sure. So I don't think any of his past injuries are as much of a question as is he just one of those guys that's injury prone? That's, you know, kind of a Tyler Eifert where every year it's something different. So I think there's a wide variant. Maybe of all these guys that we've talked about so far, there's the wider variance with Eric Gall just because of the health issue. But they, I mean, he is, you know, what kind of what we said about Chris Jenkins, where he's that all around guy. He's not a Tanner Hudson or a Mike Gesicki who only catches passes. He's not a Drew Sample who's primarily a blocker. He does both really well. And, you know, with Gesicki and Hudson on 1 year deals, you could see him being the starter next year because Drew's going to be in that role as the extra blocking tight end. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of upside there, but there's also a scary floor.
Yeah, I like this pick a lot. I mean, it was kind of exactly what we had been talking about before the draft was, let's just take a shot on an athletic kind of prospect in the mid rounds and just see what happens. And I think that's what they did here. I mean, the upside is that he's the long term starting tight end on this roster. I mean, I think that is absolutely the upside. I don't know if he's ever going to be a Pro Bowler, all pro type, but I think this is the type of guy you want to take a chance on. Maybe he fell a little bit because of those injuries and lack of production a little bit, but he is the type of athletic presence with the movement skills that I think you want to take a chance on in the fourth round. Fifth round, Josh Newton. This was a cornerback selection. I thought they might have gone a little earlier on cornerback, honestly. Yeah. I mean, we talked about a cornerback pick as early as round two. They wait till round five to pick up Josh Newton out of TCU. I'm not entirely sure on what I think about Josh Newton for year one. I think that in a best case scenario for the Bengals, Josh Newton is just playing special teams on year one. But I do think there's a scenario where he's like the top backup perimeter corner. I mean, if you look at how this cornerback room is built right now, I think there's a situation where he could be the top backup guy off the bench if DJ Turner or Cam Taylor-Britt goes down, depending on how Dax Hill plays over the summer and in training camp as he's moving to corner. So I think there is a situation where Josh Newton sees some real playing time in his rookie year.
I mean, that's bad news for the Bengals if he's the top outside corner, because that means either Dax Hill is a complete failure or DJ Turner. They're going to battle it out this year to see who starts opposite Cam Taylor-Britt. I thought it was going to be early on a cornerback or punt because you just don't see them. They just don't pan out. It's one of those positions where you don't see a lot of fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounders make it or have big impacts. But they really did like him a lot. And after our conference call with him, we could see why. I mean, that guy, he was hilarious. He cussed more than anyone ever has. I don't know if he actually knew he was talking to reporters. It was kind of loud where he was. And when the Bengals media relations guy told him who he was and what we were doing, I think he's like, yeah, let's do it, whatever it is. And I don't know if he knew exactly who he was talking to, but he's kind of a insurance for DJ Ivy because DJ Ivy was really coming on and he was having a big role in special teams, and that ACL came in December. So I think that's why they took a flyer on Josh Newton in the fifth round, bring him in, and maybe he is playing gunner doing something on special teams until DJ Ivy can get back.
Yep, I agree. And I think in a worst case scenario for the player, I mean, he'll be 24 in September, so he's a little bit older for a prospect. Mm-hmm. I think there's just a chance he's not athletic enough to play boundary corner in the NFL. And if that happens, then I think he'll just be a special team guy long term. Sixth round, Tanner McLaughlin, double dipped on tight end. Best case, I think, again, is pretty high. Daniel Jeremiah had Tanner McLaughlin as the tight end two in the entire class, the number 68 player in the entire class. I wouldn't put it out of the question that he's an impact player in year one. It's probably unlikely. Tight ends take a lot of time to develop. Bengals have other veterans on this roster. But I think long term, this is another potential starter. Between him and Eric Gall, you've found some guys with some run after catch ability, with some dynamic movement skills. I think between these two guys, you've given your shot. The Bengals have given themselves a shot at finding a long term tight end one that they just haven't done in recent drafts.
Yeah, I think this was clearly a case of best player available where, you know, I don't know that they would have taken another tight end had it not been McLaughlin, someone they were so high on. And again, it's kind of like the Newton thing where it's some injury insurance if Eric Gall isn't ready. I don't think we're going to see Eric Gall start the season on PUP because it sounds like he's going to be ready for training camp. And I don't know that they would intentionally hold him out because that's the case. You can't, once you practice, you can't start the year on PUP. So I do think we're going to see him. But like I said earlier, you just never know with a guy that's had injury history. It's not a bad idea to back him up. And it's going to be interesting to see because all of a sudden now that room is pretty deep. And where do they go? And what does the pecking order play out?
We'll talk about that in a little bit when we get to our depth chart projection. I feel like that was one of the hardest areas that I had, was trying to figure out how this tight end room was going to go. Sixth round, Edge, Cedric Johnson. I think the best case scenario for this is that something happens with Trey Hendrickson, that Trey Hendrickson's trade request somehow happens. We all know it's not going to happen. Okay. I'm just throwing things out there. That's what would have to happen for Cedric Johnson, I think, to get playing time, is that Trey Hendrickson somehow moves on. Maybe the Bengals get kind of sick of Joseph Osai. Maybe they trade him or get rid of him. Other than that, I think the edge room for the Bengals is pretty set, to the point where Cedric Johnson, I think, is probably just a practice squad guy.
Yeah. He could be a Cam Sample type where, you know, use him inside a little, outside a little. It's probably going to take an injury for him to make the 53. But a guy that's a premier position, and it's never a bad idea to throw a dart at a guy at an edge guy in the sixth or seventh round. And I think that's exactly what the Bengals did there.
I think it's kind of the same thing in the seventh, where they took Dejan Anthony, who's you always need defensive backs. And this is a guy who can probably play a little safety, a little corner. You can do a little bit of everything. You know, I do think, though, given the makeup of it, and we talked, there is room on this cornerback depth chart for another piece, which we might be able to talk about a little bit later. I don't know if it's going to be Dejan Anthony or if that's more likely to be a veteran, right? If they want to add someone to this cornerback room, I think, again, Dejan Anthony's probably going to need an injury to be a factor, but could be a guy who sticks in the practice squad. Maybe he comes up. Maybe he's takes over. Again, depending on how Dax Hill does, maybe this could be a slot option down the road.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not love his story? He walks on at Shepherd. He walks on at Liberty, parlays that into a scholarship at Ole Miss in the SEC, and gets drafted. Almost goes undrafted. It probably would have been a better story if he went undrafted, and then he's going to have to prove himself one more time. Yeah. And if he had gone undrafted, he would have been a defensive back with that dog mentality who didn't go drafted from Ole Miss and be a Mike Hilton, total Mike Hilton clone. Mike Hilton was one of the guys I wanted to talk to yesterday in the locker room. We didn't see him there, but I know Mike Hilton is thrilled about having the chance to work with Dejan Anthony.
Yeah, that is such a good connection. I love that storyline too. Last pick, Matt Lee, center. Again, they waited a long time here before they went with offensive line, but with interior offensive line. I do think Matt Lee is about as good of a prospect as you're going to find at pick 237, though. PFF's Andrew Russell, these stats are from him. Matt Lee, PFF pass block grade, 97th percentile. True pass set grade, 96th percentile. 9.86 relative athletic score. I mean, the only thing you don't like about Matt Lee is he's just undersized, I think. I think in a best case scenario, absolute best case scenario, maybe he could become the starting center down the road, and like maybe next year, maybe if Ted Karras is not extended, maybe if Ted Karras gets a short-term deal. I think Matt Lee has that upside as a starting center, because this is an area of the draft, of all the positions, sixth and seventh round, you can find starting centers. Like this is the one position you can find these guys late in the draft. Maybe they did with Matt Lee, maybe they didn't. I think there's a definite chance that they did.
Yeah, I think starter is his ceiling. It's interesting because it's with Ted Karras, he's going in the final year of his deal, and it does seem like an endorsement that they waited till the seventh round to get a guy. But he's 31. You know, he's going to be 32 next offseason before the 2025 season even starts. We know the Bengals don't like to extend guys like that, and he means so much to this locker room. But so did DJ Reader, and they didn't even talk to him. So I don't know. I don't know where this is going to go, but it does seem like, you know, Matt Lee is a guy with a high ceiling. You mentioned it, you know, Ian had him really high on his board, more in like the fourth round range, and the Bengals get him in the seventh, and he's coming from a power five school where he's played decent competition. So that is not the typical, even though you can find starting centers in the seventh round, that's not the typical target the Bengals have gone with in the past. It's been receiver or corner or edge, one of those premier positions where you take a flyer. So I found this to be a really interesting pick. It's almost like they got to pick 10 and like, holy crap, we didn't take an interior offensive lineman. We have to take one here. And it also could have been best player on the board, because there were guys that had him ranked much higher than the seventh round.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think this, the upside is definitely there. And even if it was just a best player available, it was an absolute need. I mean, they needed another interior an option, at least. Not to say Matt Lee is going to have a role this year, but I think just adding another option to that room was a good call. Okay, that's how we see the picks. Let's do a little Jay's Got Stats. Jay, what do you have for us today? We want to talk about where these picks rank against the consensus board and against Ian Cummings' big board. So, and I think for the most part, the Bengals got some good value on a couple picks. I think they definitely went against what Ian had, what maybe the consensus board might have had. But what do you have for us, Jay, on Jay's Got Stats?
Yeah, going right back to Matt Lee, the biggest value, according to Ian, the Bengals get him at pick 237. He had him 151 on his big board, so a plus of 86. Interesting that Ian was within five on four picks. He had Amarius Mims 23rd, he goes 18. He had Jermaine Burton 79, he goes 80. He had Tanner McLaughlin 190, he goes 194. And he had Dejon Anthony 223, and he goes 224. That's remarkable. Whew. That is really, really good. The surprising element here is the biggest reach for the Bengals, as far as Ian was concerned, was Chris Jenkins. He had Chris Jenkins way down at 85, and the Bengals took him at 49. So overall, I mean, Eric All was 27 off of reach. Josh Newton was a plus 20. Cedric Johnson was a plus 35. So for the most part, the Bengals were right there with Ian's projections. And that wasn't the case with some of these draft prognosticators where there were much bigger swings. But that surprised me that when I started going through this, that Chris Jenkins appears to be the biggest reach. I know Bengals and Bengals fans will love to prove Ian wrong. Or we'll hope to prove Ian wrong.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's tough, though. Ian knows what he's talking about. Ian is as informed. I mean, I leaned on him so much during this draft process. And it doesn't surprise me that he's that close on kind of where he's in that close with how the league viewed these players. Because I think he is just excellent at giving these evaluations. That makes sense to me. Let's talk about a few superlatives, Jay, for this draft. Let's just go over a few of our thoughts and kind of sum up what we think of this draft. Best overall pick. What did you have? I mean, they made 10 picks. They didn't trade anything. Who of these 10 picks is your favorite, Jay?
Yeah, I got to go with Jermaine Burton. I really think there's a lot there. I know there's the concern about the emotional maturity and all that, but the Bengals vet this as well as anybody. They do their homework, and that the character and culture and all that is so important to them. And this might look like a case of, well, we can go get somebody that doesn't fit what we want and hope our guys can whip him into shape. And there is some of that, but it's not like you're just going and getting a total rogue. I mean, I do, after talking to Jermaine on Saturday and seeing some of what the Bengals see when they met with him, I think, yes, the upside is huge for Amarius Mims, but he's still a first round pick. Jermaine Burton has similar crazy upside potential, and they got him in the third round, and they wanted, and they could have waited till 97. They could have gone a different direction to 80. I was really surprised. I thought maybe fourth round is where they might target him. And to go be that aggressive and get him at 80, they clearly like something there. And I think that's probably going to be, that's my favorite pick, or that's my best pick right now. But Amarius Mims could easily prove me wrong.
I'll be boring and say the same. I had Jermaine Burton as well. Yeah. I just think the upside is so tantalizing. And to get that in the third round, a guy who, from every draft analyst that you read, could be a legitimate wide receiver one. Maybe he won't be that in the Bengals offense with Chase here, but you've got to take these chances at some points. I think you know that T. Higgins is most likely not going to be here past 25. I think you've just got to take these sort of chances. And even if there's character concerns, even if there's some other stuff going on, it has the potential to be not just a home run, but maybe like a grand slam pick in the third round. It really does. And I love taking that risk and just hoping for that upside to kind of come in. Biggest surprise on the draft. I'll go with mine first, Jay. I think the idea that the Bengals didn't draft a running back at all was a little bit surprising to me. I never thought they were going to take a third or fourth round guy like some mock drafts had, the Bengals considering a guy in that middle of the round range. But I did think they would consider somebody in round five, round six, round seven, at least to add another body to this room. Because now I think you've got Zach Moss, you've got Chase Brown, but now you're unless you go out and sign a veteran or something, or an undrafted free agent makes the team, the Bengals are counting on, again, Travion Williams or Chris Evans or these guys that they've counted on in the past. I was a little surprised they didn't at least add somebody, an option in fifth round, sixth round, somebody with some upside, somebody with some pass catching ability, just another body to add to this backfield.
Yeah, especially when they had that many picks. That did surprise me a little bit too. But on the other hand, you know, you talked about it with centers where you can find starters in the seventh round. You can find starting running backs or complementary running backs in undrafted free agency. And the Bengals went out. Apparently, I mean, nothing is official until next week when they bring them in, they pass their physicals and actually put pen to paper. But looks like they're going to bring a couple guys in. They're going to be able to compete there. And, you know, maybe it's just the belief that Chase Brown and Zach Moss are that good. And they've kept Travion Williams around all these years, even though he's never really gotten a chance to play. So they clearly like him. So it was a little surprising to me, but it wasn't my biggest surprise. My biggest surprise is that they waited till the seventh round to attack the interior of the offensive line. Stunned me. I mean, I thought fourth round was set up for that perfectly, especially with having the two third round picks. So, you address your biggest needs and then you go and get that center or guard of the future in that round. And just each pick kept going by and they weren't taking them. And it's like, wait, Mahogany's still on the board. They're not taking him. And that one really, really surprised me. And maybe it is a long-term plan and they intend on bringing Ted Karras back. But I would have said there was no way if we were making a prediction kind of game and you said they're not going to take an interior offensive lineman until the seventh round, I would have put in less than 5% chance of that happening, and it happened.
It's very surprising, and I don't know if that speaks more well of Ted Karras, of Matt, what they think about what Matt Lee can do. I mean, I think it had some effects for multiple people, but yeah, it surprised me too. Last one for superlatives here, Jay. Biggest missed opportunity. Was there something the Bengals didn't do which you thought maybe they should have on draft weekend?
Well, it kind of goes back to that. I don't want to denigrate Eric All, who fellow Fairfield High School graduate for me.
Of course, how could you?
But I mean, Tanner Bordellini was there, and he went two picks later, and McCormick was there, and you know, if it was their plan to take two tight ends, you never know if McLaughlin's going to be there when the year next time around, but it just feels like that was a missed opportunity, that those are some quality guys that could give you instant depth and possible starter reps down the road. And that might be the decision they look back on with regret in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I loved Bordellini. I would have loved to see them take him in the fourth round, but so I totally understand that. Mine for the biggest missed opportunity, I do think that there was a chance that maybe the Bengals should have consolidated some of these 10 picks and maybe tried to move up at some point. I mean, this was a pretty shallow draft, so I think maybe moving some of those sixth, seventh, maybe even your fifth, and trying to get an extra fourth or something like that could have been an avenue they would have pursued. And then also kind of the converse of that is something that the Eagles did, which is the Eagles acquired multiple 2025 draft picks because they felt this year's class was so shallow. They felt the undrafted class was so shallow. I think the Eagles only signed 7 undrafted players, which is one of the lowest classes in the league. And they just stocked up on 2025 picks because they think next year is going to be a deeper class with the COVID year is still kind of affecting these college prospects. And a lot of older prospects are going to be coming out next year. Maybe some more developed guys who can contribute immediately. It should be a deeper class. So I think the idea of getting more shots at the apple next year could have been a good idea. So maybe that was one thing the Bengals could have thought about.
Yeah, that's a good point. Cause they don't like the trade up. But to do that, to trade back for picks next year would have been the move to make. And that's the thing, you know, even if you want to move up, if you try to package some of those late picks, you said it wasn't a great draft. So there's probably not a lot of interest in, hey, we want an extra fifth and an extra sixth or whatever it would take to move up a few spots. Teams saw it the same way, but that is an interesting point where, you know, you possibly trade back and get some 2025 picks. I haven't looked that far ahead to see what they're going to get comp pick wise next year, but I'm not sure it's going to be a lot. I'm trying to run through my head the moves.
I don't think they'll have over the cap has them projected for no compensatory picks next year. So I don't think it'll be a problem.
So it's just going to be the straight up 7. And, you know, if they do what they are hoping to do, it's going to be late in every round. So that may not have been a bad idea to try to grab some extra ones.
Yeah. Howie Roseman, man, best GM in the NFL. He's always forward thinking. He's always on top of that stuff.
Maybe tag Higgins next year and then trade him for draft picks. That's always a possibility.
Absolutely. Okay, winners and losers. Now, this is going to be, we're going to look at some players on the Bengals roster who, whether these, did these draft results help them? Did these draft results hurt them? I think there's a couple of players on the Bengals roster who had a lot riding on this draft. For me, the number one winner is absolutely Cordell Volson. I mean, that they did not draft, the Bengals did not draft a guy who's realistically going to compete at left guard. I don't think that's the plan with Amarius Mims, is to play him at guard. Nat Lee is not going to compete with Cordell Volson to start. Maybe there's an outside chance the Bengals go and try and sign somebody before the summer, but I just don't think so. I think if they wanted to improve, they would have taken a shot in the draft. Cordell Volson, you know, whether Bengals fans like it or not, I think he's locked in as the starter for this year. No questions.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think you can slide Ted Karras in there, too, as a winner. Yeah. Just the fact that they waited till the seventh round. But that's a Volson for sure, because there are so many of those offensive tackle prospects that look, oh, they can play right tackle, but they can play guard this year and compete with Volson. And they didn't go that direction. They went with a pure, you're not putting a 6'8 guy at guard. It's just not going to happen. Now, Volson's 6'7, so it's close. I get it. But that was an endorsement of the trajectory they think that he is on. I'll go with a winner of Andre Yoshivas, because I really thought they were going to take two receivers, and it's like, okay, they took Burton in the third round at 80. Next, if they take a receiver here pretty quick, that's Yoshivas might have a hard time making the 53 here. And then they didn't even take another one the rest of the way. So I know we're going to get to the depth chart. I think you can pencil Yoshivas in and as a member of the 53, and what he can do on special teams, you know, maybe he's in that 46 where he's starting, or he's dressing on game day.
I definitely agree with that. One of my losers, I'm going to go with Tanner Hudson. I think Tanner Hudson was one of my kind of favorite players, one of my favorite stories last year. I think he did a lot of good things with the Bengals offense, both when Joe Burrow was on the field, when Jake Browning was on the field. But, you know, the Bengals drafted two tight ends, and I think there's no doubt that Mike Gesicki is making the roster. There's no doubt that Drew Sample is making the roster. If Eric Gall and Tanner McLaughlin are both healthy and can show anything during the summer, it's going to be hard for the Bengals to cut them. So unless the Bengals are keeping five tight ends, or unless Eric Gall does go on the PUP list, which we can get into, Tanner Hudson could be out of a job. I mean, he only signed a league minimum deal. It's not like they have anything invested in him. I think there's a chance that this draft might have hurt Tanner Hudson quite a bit.
Yeah. For one of my losers, I'll go Zach Carter. Anytime you're on the roster, and we were talking about what Ted Karras is, what if they draft a center in the third or fourth? You're wondering, okay, what's that mean for my job? But they take Mims. Trent Brown, maybe a little worried about whether he gets beat out, but Orlando Brown knows he's good. Burton, he doesn't have Ja'Marr Chase or T. Higgins quaking in their boots, but Zach Carter, I mean, they take two of their first four picks, play your position, and you haven't done that much anyhow up to this point. I still think he makes the 53, but I think he's on borrowed time. He's a third round pick that has never really panned out for them. And he can be a solid depth piece, but he is going to be on the bubble in training camp.
Yeah, he will be pushed. He was on the field when there were too many big and explosive plays allowed. It felt like every time he was on the field when that happened, he will be pushed in training camp, no doubt. I'll go with another winner here. I'll throw in a couple guys, a couple former Michigan teammates, Dax Hill and DJ Turner. I mean, the Bengals did not use a cornerback pick until round five, until Josh Newton, as we mentioned. I would say DJ Turner is the favorite to start at outside corner. And as we learned this weekend, Dax Hill is a full-time corner. He's not playing safety. He'll play on the slot. He'll play on the perimeter. I mean, the Bengals are talking about this as a true competition for that starting role. I mean, to me, it would be a huge upset if Dax Hill overtakes DJ Turner for that role. But I still think they're both winners, because the Bengals just didn't add any cornerback talent until round five.
How about another Michigan guy as a winner, Chris Evans? I mean, not drafting a running back. He's running back four right now. And each of the last 2 years and three of the last four, they've kept four running backs on the 53. And, you know, I thought maybe this was the year that they bring someone in, and just Chris Evans has never really panned out here. He had a couple splash plays as a rookie, but he's kind of been in a doghouse and buried on that depth chart. And I think this gives him some life to think that maybe he can make the 53 and stick around here one more year.
Let's go with one last Michigan player as we talk about losers, Brad Robbins. You know, I'm going to sit here and pretend I'm a punting expert by any means, but I've talked about Puntalytics quite a few times on this show. I do trust their evaluations of punters. On Twitter, Puntalytics said they believe Austin McNamara will win the Bengals job, punting job, and end the year in the top half of the league as a punter. So whether that's punting EPA or net punts, whatever it is, they're pretty high on McNamara. So I'll just go ahead and steal that take from Puntalytics and say that Brad Robbins is going to end up losing his job this summer.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to Brad yesterday, and I went, and everybody else was waiting on the DBs, and so I got him all by myself, and I was like, oh, you're eating lunch. I'll come back when you're done. He's like, I don't need to finish lunch. I just need to finish this bite. And he wanted to talk, and he was not scared by the competition at all, and he's embracing it. He said he doesn't care if he averages 60 yards a season. He expects them to bring somebody in to compete with him every single year. You know, we knew this was coming. This is a big leg coming in. And I mean, the punters with 150 punts in their careers, McNamara ranks 10th in NCAA history with that 49-yard average. So it's going to be interesting. I don't know. I was going to say we're going to bring our stopwatches to measure hang time and training camp, but heck, you got a stopwatch on your phone now. We can just pull out our phones and do it. It's like every year now. There's a punting competition, whether it was Huber and Chrisman, or you know, Chrisman and Brad Robbins, and now Brad Robbins and McNamara. They need to find a good one that they can depend on. And I don't know if I'd put him in the loser category simply because we knew this was coming, but it's going to be a stiff challenge because Austin McNamara does have a heck of a resume, and he, like Brad Robbins, was in college for a long time. So they're both older guys. You think they're both going to be mature enough to handle this competition, and it's going to be interesting to watch.
It's the life of a punter, right? You can never rest on your laurels. They're always bringing somebody to fight for your job. I'll throw in one last winner, and you talked about the running backs already, but Zach Moss and Chase Brown, I think, are winners too. Just the fact that no running back was added shows a lot of faith in those guys, right? That Zach Brown and Chase, or Zach Moss and Chase Brown, I'm combining their names already.
It's Zach just Brown, let's go see a concert.
Yeah, let's do it. I think that it shows a lot of faith in this thunder and lightning tandem and what this combination can be. So I'll put them as my last winner. Do you have any other winners or losers? Do we cover everybody there?
I don't know if losers is the right term. It's a little stiff, but just Eric Awe to have them draft another tight end right behind him. I think it would have been a much better situation for him to be the guy to come in. So that, I don't think it's going to affect the way he prepares or his chances or anything, but it's always dicey when they pick you fairly high, fourth round, and then they back it up two picks later with someone else at your position.
Yeah. You're feeling good around four. I'm the new Bengals starting tight end here going forward. And then a couple of rounds later, they brought in some competition. So that's gotta be a little bit tough. I get that. Let's do a wrap up here and do one more thing. We want to project this depth chart. We've got a long time before training camp. I say a long time, but it's really not that long. Like we're going to blink and it's going to be training camp, Jay. Like I just know
you wish my summer away.
That's how it's going to go. But we do want to talk about how this 53-man roster is going to go. So let's just quickly run through and see who we've got for these positions. I've got Jay Morrison's trusty 53-man roster by year spreadsheet pulled up just so I could, make sure I've got the right number of positions that the Bengals normally go with at each spot. Quarterback, I think, is pretty easy. Joe Burrow, Jake Browning. They gave Jake Browning a nice little deal there. I think that's pretty easy. They'll stick with two quarterbacks. No need to even discuss that. Running back, I think, was a little bit different. So they've kept four running backs the past 2 years. I still only had them keeping three, though. I had Zach Moss, Chase Brown, and Trevion just to give a little more depth at other spots. So I went with three running backs. I could see them keeping four, though. I wouldn't be surprised either way.
Yeah, with what the practice squad is now and the guys you can have on there, I'm the same way. I've got them keeping three. I just don't think they're high enough on Chris Evans, and it gives you the flexibility to go somewhere else. And you know, you mentioned my spreadsheet. I don't want to jump ahead here because we kind of do these in the right position. But if you keep three running backs, that allows you to possibly keep 10 offensive linemen instead of nine. Or my spreadsheet, I go back to 2006. They have never kept five tight ends. This could be the year, especially with the new kickoff rules. And you want bigger guys that can also move in space, in tight spaces. And just with the nature of what Eric Awe and Tanner McLaughlin are, I could see that possibly being a direction they go where those guys can help out on special teams. And I don't know if you're not going to keep Eric Awe and Tanner McLaughlin, are you gonna risk exposing those guys to waivers just to try to sneak them back on the 53? I think there's a good chance either one of those guys would get plucked. And so then you're talking about then who are you cutting? Are you cutting Hudson? Or you're not cutting Sample? You just signed him a 3-year deal. You're definitely not cutting Gesicki. So I think they could go light at running back with three and keep five tight ends, as weird as that sounds.
No, I'm right there with you. I've got the same kind of setup here that I think that will, and it's a unique roster construction that the Bengals have done, obviously, but I think this is kind of a unique roster build that they're going with this year, which could force them to change their stripes a little bit. Wide receiver, I've got six. Okay, Chase Higgins, Burton, Trenton Irwin, Yoshivas, and Charlie Jones. I'm assuming is that your six? Okay. Yep. I think that's pretty cut and dry. I don't know if there would be anybody else who could get into that mix. I think that's pretty cut and dry at wide receiver.
Yeah. I mean, Pryor, Lassiter, one of those guys, Bo Jackson's nephew, Shedrick Jackson, maybe if there's an injury. But if these six stay healthy, that's a lock. That's as big of a lock as Burrow and Browning at quarterback.
Yeah, for sure. I'm trying to make sure that I actually have 53 players added up here, because now I'm doubting my math and seeing if I added somebody extra. I don't think I did, though. So, okay, what do you have at tight end then? So do you have them keeping all five, or do you have them having Eric all on pop? Or, okay.
Yep.
You've got Gesicki, Sample, all McLaughlin, and Hudson. Okay. I've got that as well, assuming my math is correct. I've got all five of those. Same logic as you. I just don't think you can risk losing one of these guys on waivers, and I think that would be a risk, depending on how they play during the preseason and training camp. Offensive line. I've got nine. I guess I could see 10. All right, do I have 10? No, I do have 10. I do have 10. I've got Orlando Brown, Caldell Wilson, Ted Karras, Alex Kappa, Trent Brown as the starters, Amarius Mims, Cody Ford, Jackson Carman, Matt Lee, Trey Hill. That's my 10. I don't feel good about it, though. I don't feel good about that. I'm not sure if I feel good about quite a few of those players. And I do think maybe that's an area where the Bengals could add a veteran in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, I've got all three draft picks from the 2021 draft on the outside looking in. I think this is it for Carmen. Same with Trey Hill. Same with Deontay Smith. I've got the five starters. Mims, obviously. Cody Ford can play tackle or guard. Matt Lee, it's weird to say a seventh round pick is a lock, but given what this depth is at interior O-line, I think he is very close to being a lock. And then for my ninth guy, I think it's either Jackson Kirkland or Devin Cochran.
Interesting.
They signed Kirkland in undrafted free agency last year. He got hurt. They've kept Cochran around despite injuries. They're both 6'7" guys. They're right there in kind of in that template with the bigger linemen that they're trying to put at the tackle positions. I think both those guys are going to be infinitely more or less expensive than Carmen. Carmen's not crazy expensive, but it just feels like his chances have run out. Maybe he has a great camp and surprises us all, but they could save $1.7 million by cutting him. And maybe that's the time you don't feel as pressed to keep him because that possibility. I mean, Cody Ford already leaped him on the depth chart, and Amarius Mims is going to leap him on the depth chart. Already has. Let's just say he's the first round pick. He's already leaped him. So he's your number five tackle who hasn't really outside of one playoff game hasn't shown much. I think all three of those 2021 picks are not going to make the 53. Maybe good chance they come back on the practice squad, but not the 53.
I think you could be right. I mean, maybe I'm holding on to Jackson Carman's draft stock too early. I mean, the production has not been there. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I don't know. They could have given him up on him going into last year if they wanted to. I mean, but they didn't. They held on to him. I'll keep him on for now, but I could easily see him going on. I see what I did here also. I am only keeping nine offensive linemen. I'm taking Trey Hill off, and I am keeping Eric All. I originally had Eric All on the pup list, but you said that was unlikely. So I think that we'll probably keep him and take Trey Hill off my offensive line list. So I've got 25 guys on offense, I think.
Yeah, I've got 25-0, 25-D, and three specialists.
Okay. Defense, again, edge, I think, is pretty cut and dry, kind of like receiver. Trey Hendrickson, Sam Hubbard, Miles Murphy, Joseph Osai, and Cam Sample. Injuries could change that, but I think that's kind of your group right now. Defensive tackle, I would say, is kind of solidified as well, depending on how you think about the end of the group here. Sheldon Rankins, BJ Hill, Chris Jenkins, and McKinley Jackson are locks. If they keep five, I mean, which I think they will, I guess Zach Carter is going to be that last guy. But like you said, Jay, I don't necessarily think that's a lock. I think he could face some competition here going into year three.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know if he doesn't make it, where if they only go four defensive tackles,
right,
where they boost up, because everything else on this roster seems pretty cut and dry to me. But it does. He's going to have a good camp to make this roster. He just hasn't shown much. And they moved him. He was more of an end in college. They had him put on some weight last year. There was a lot of hope last year that he could really play a big role, and it just didn't happen. So he's still cheap, still going into year three of his contract. I think that's going to play in his advantage. And the fact that they don't need to go six linebackers. They don't need to go seven corners. They don't need to go five safeties. Maybe it's to keep somebody on the offensive side if they want to go stronger at another position. But I think odds are right now that Zach Carter makes it as the fifth defensive tackle.
Linebacker, top four, I'd say, are locked in. Logan Wilson, Jermaine Pratt, ADG, Joe Bocci. Who'd you have? Do you have them keeping five? I had Devin Harper as their fifth, the linebacker they claimed off waivers last year. But it could be anybody, really. I mean, they added a couple linebackers in free agency, including Aaron Casey from Indiana. Mm-hmm. I think any of those guys could grab that last role. It's going to be a pure special teams role for the most part. So I think that's one of the spots on this roster that's truly up for grabs. Like, fifth linebacker, I know it's not exactly a sexy position, but I think that's one spot that could be up for grabs this summer.
Yeah, and it's an important role on special teams. And you know, Harper did get into six games last year because of his special teams ability. And so I right now, we'll see. We get into camp and those undrafted guys start looking good. Maybe we readjust this. But as it sits right now, Devin Harper's my fifth linebacker.
Okay, what do you have at cornerback, Jay? Like we mentioned, Dax Hill's a full-time cornerback now. This room's going to look a little bit different. Why do you see them kind of working out this cornerback depth chart next year?
Yeah, I've got them keeping six. So, you know, Cam Taylor-Britt, Mike Hilton, obviously Dax and DJ Turner. So that's your top four. I think Newton makes it as the fifth. And then it's curious. I've got him keeping DJ Ivy, but he is a pup candidate. Where coming off the ACL in December, maybe he's not ready for the start of camp and maybe they kind of protect his spot and start him on pup. And if that's the case, I don't think it's to add someone at another position. I think you would just slide Jalen Davis in there because he is your right now the most experienced slot back up to Mike Hilton. I know Dax Hill could probably play in there, but they're going to be working him a lot on at outside corner and compete with DJ Turner. So I think it's going to be six, and it's just a question of will that six be DJ Ivy or will it be Jalen Davis?
I'm on a similar wavelength to you here, but I've got a little different take. I think it'll be six as well. I think DJ Ivy will go on pup. I think the Bengals could add one more veteran here. I think if they're going to add a summer veteran, this is the spot where it needs to be. I think you Dax Hill can train it, can cross train it outside quarter. That's fine. But you're viewing him primarily as your slot backup. And then I think you go out and sign, because quarterback's the one area where there are still players out there, right? I don't think they're going to go, Bengals are not going to sign Stephon Gilmore all of a sudden, but Fabian Moreau, Jerry Jacobs, Akello Witherspoon, Steven Nelson, guys that have started and played a lot of snaps in the NFL that have experience, that know what they're doing for the most part, that, I mean, it's almost May, Jay. These guys aren't counting against the compensatory formula anymore. Not that that's going to be an issue, as we talked about, but they're also going to be really cheap. These guys are just looking for a spot to join a training camp roster. I wouldn't say I'd be surprised, because I think the Bengals do feel comfortable with their cornerback rotation right now. But I do think if you're going to go out and add an extra veteran to this roster, I think adding that third, fourth, fifth cornerback somewhere in there, it would be the way to go this summer.
All right. So I know you write about the league a lot, and you're in tune with a lot of what's going on outside of the Bengals. Over under, what do you think the AAV is for Xavien Howard this year, who is still a free agent and still out there?
Pretty low.
Real low?
Oh, yeah. I would say at this point, I think it would be low. I mean, he's older. He's over the age of 30. He's dealt with a lot of injuries. It's been 2-3 years since he's been really that kind of really productive player. I think he had 10 interceptions and led the league. Was that 2020 or 2021? So it's been a while. I'd say it'd be pretty low. I mean, $3 million, maybe with a chance for him. I think with a guy like that, you want to put in some incentives, too, based on playing time and get him some incentives. But I think that could be an option. I think they might go with a little lower profile name, though, because I wonder if Xavien Howard comes in to Cincinnati and he's expecting to be the starter. I mean, I think that's maybe the kind of mentality he would have. Maybe you get a guy like Witherspoon or Moreau who's been comfortable in that backup role throughout their career. Maybe it's a little less of an issue in the locker room, but I could see it. I mean, I don't think it's going to be Gilmore, but I guess Stephen Howard is kind of like that next tier down of where they could consider if they wanted to add a corner.
Yeah, I just see him as a guy that's affordable. They've got the money to do it. He's got the pedigree. He's probably...
He played with Lou Anarumo and Zach Taylor, right?
I was just going to say,
he was with them
in Miami. And, he's at that age where you're ring chasing a little bit, and Bengals have to be an attractive option. It wouldn't surprise me. It would be a bigger swing than Eli Apple was a couple of years ago. But if they can get him at a reasonable amount, it would not be a bad idea to go stock that position.
No.
Especially because you don't know. Yeah. It's like, it's okay, is DJ Turner or Dax Hill going to be the starter? I mean, is it going to be a winner by default, or is someone actually going to step up? You're still, the jury's still out on both of those guys. And Xavier's 30, he could come in and hold it down for a year possibly. I think it's a really intriguing option.
Because, I mean, like I said before, you really look at this depth chart. Let's say DJ Turner wins the starting job. Let's say he gets nicked up. Dax Hill goes out there. Maybe he just cannot play NFL outside corner. Like that's a shot that he just can't do it. So now what? You're risking Josh Newton to go out there and start as a rookie and as a fifth round pick with limited athletic upside. Like I don't like that strategy. I think that there needs to be another veteran here who's been in NFL games, who like knows what they're doing. And I think they will. I think that's the position they'll target here over the summer. Specialists, I think we know. Well, actually, no, I've got a surprise here at punter, because I think McNamara will take the job from Robert. So I'll go Evan McPherson, Austin McNamara, and Cal Adamidis for my three specialists. Do you agree, or are you still in the Brad Hobbins hive? Brad Hobbins? Did I say Brad Hobbins? Brad Robbins.
I do. I'm going to go with Robbins until I lay eyes on McNamara, because it's not – Darren didn't seem exasperated.
Yeah.
And view Brad as a failure. He just said he has to get better. And it doesn't matter what position you play in the NFL. Your biggest leap is year one to year two. So let's see what Brad looks like and when he gets into this competition. And not predicting it, but right now, that I guess I'm projecting that it's going to be Robbins. And we did skip over safety, but I think safety is a rubber stamp. It's going to be Geno. It's going to be Von Bell. It's going to be Jordan Battle. And then Tyson Anderson should be back from the ACL. And so six corners, four safeties. And I think that's a pretty much set position group of safety.
Yeah, I totally forgot about safety. I do feel like it's kind of guaranteed on who the four players will be. I don't think there's that much competition there. So that's kind of how we see it. I think we'll go 53 for 53 with those picks, Jay. Once we come into September, I've got my doubts, but I think it's a pretty good overview. Okay. Jay, if you want to pull up your screen, we can go ahead and get this with. I don't want to roast you too much, but we did have our game last week, our Bengals podcast game, where we did some questions, we did some predictions on who the Bengals were going to take. We gave some points out on what positions they took in what rounds, and some extra points on if either of us picked the actual pick in the right round. So we'll pull this up here real quick. Here is what this looks like. So as you can see, I did do a little better than James this on this draft game. I think it's mostly the result of luck, though. Like if I would have had the first pick in round one, I told Jay I would have taken J.C. Latham too. So that I'm not taking too much credit for Mims, but you can see the final score there, 52-15. It was a good draft weekend for me.
You didn't even get credit for Burton, and you still got him right. It was just not the right pick. I mean, and then the questions at the bottom, the O-linemen and the tight ends, it just, yeah.
And we did get the teammates. We got the teammates. We got the two players from the same school from Ole Miss, but neither was on our radar. We did get one TCU player, but we both missed the final position there too. But I think we did a decent job of identifying the players the Bengals would at least consider, right, in these ranges in the right position. So I think we did a pretty good job here. But, Jay wanted to put this up on the screen. I'm not forcing him to do this. Just to get that clear. But, Jay, you've won so many games that we've done here on this show over the past year. I'm glad I finally could walk away with a victory.
I can take my L, and It was such, you won so big. It's like, we have to put this up there because it's hard to if we do this next year, if anybody does this next year, it just figures it would be a much closer competition. And I'm willing to admit that I got smoked.
I've kind of redone my office here. I've got some Bengals stuff over here. I think I'm going to maybe take a clip of this, a screenshot of this game, get it framed and probably put it right.
Yeah, no, I just here. Oh, sorry. It went away. Just, I guess
I'll probably add it right here. Just make sure it's on the screen at all times, just when we're doing the show. So I'll look for that next week. Jay, anything else before we sign off? One more reminder, Jay, Paul Diener Jr., Mike Potts, everybody talking Bengals, Nation Kitchen and Bar at the Bank, 7 p.m. tonight. Going to be a lot of fun. Everyone go and get your questions answered there. Jay, anything else before we sign off for today's episode?
Yeah, one more person who is going to be there tonight, who is the most important person in my life. And I just wanted to say happy anniversary to my wife, Nikki. It's actually tomorrow, May 1st, but 31 years going strong. She's incredibly patient, incredibly understanding to be able to do this job and be away on nights and weekends as much as I have. It's not unappreciated. And, you know, if you are coming to the show tonight, go up and tell her happy anniversary. And 31 years, 30 was the big one last year. But now we're moving into the next decade. And she doesn't watch the show, but maybe I'll clip it. I know. She's going to at least come tonight and then support the show in person, but maybe I'll clip this little part and send it to her and buy her a card.
There you go. Well, happy anniversary to you. That's great. Hey. Congratulations. 31 years. That's a really good, really good long run there. That's great. I'm happy for you guys. Have a lot of fun tonight with Paul and the gang. Yeah. I mean, that's going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait to listen in. We'll be back next week to talk more Bengals. Thanks again for listening to the PFN Bengals podcast.